Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. This month's story is Noah's Temple by Matthew Warner. But before we get into the story, we have a brief message from our sponsor. If you provide technical support to clients, colleagues, friends, or family, have you found an easy, cost-effective way without being there in person? The best way to provide technical support is to do it online with GoToAssist Express. Help friends and clients learn how to use new software and fix family computer problems without being there in person. GoToAssist Express lets you easily view and control any other computer online so you can quickly resolve technical issues. Whether you're in customer support, technical consultation, or management, or just a computer guru, GoToAssist Express will help you. Increase revenue, reduce travel, and support time, and service more clients. Brought to you by Citrix, you know GoToAssist Express will be easy and secure. Our listeners can try GoToAssist Express free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. That's visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. A couple of quick announcements before we get into our story. I will be attending PenguinCon in Troy, Michigan from April 30th through May 2nd. You can find out more about PenguinCon at penguicon.org. Also, Anne and I will be at Balticon 44 in Baltimore, Maryland on May 28th through 31st. I will be on two panels, and we are doing a very special event, Variant Frequencies Live. I will be narrating The Encroacher by Jonathan C. Gillespie. We also will have a special guest helping with the story, Michael Spence. So come join us at Balticon on Sunday, May 30th for Variant Frequencies Live. You can find out more about Balticon 44 at balticon.org. This is the third story that we have run by Matthew Warner. His previous contributions to Variant Frequencies were Life Insurance, and a story that he co-authored with Gary A. Bronbeck, Under the Bridge Downtown. Matthew once again gives us a brilliant narration. Now, on to our story. Noah's Temple by Matthew Warner.
Hi, this is Matthew Warner, and I'm pleased to present to you this story, Noah's Temple. Noah's Temple is a science fiction story set in our far future, and it has a little bit of commentary on religious literalism. If you like this story, I hope you'll check out my other works by visiting MatthewWarner.com. And now, Noah's Temple. The following is from the New Definitive Bible of Khan, is edited by Pope Luther in the 8th century after Khan, A.K. When the last of the seven cataclysms came, meteorites fell upon the earth for 40 days. The priest Noah gathered his people and livestock into a bomb shelter, then descended alone to the bottom of Grandy Canyon. There he invoked Great Khan the Protector in the old language, saying, "Ak Se Ji Khan," and Khan did rise from the ground to save him. And that was from the Book of Noah, chapter 1, verses 2 to 5. The rift, called Creva in Grandy Canyon in ancient American English, contained millions of loose stones that the mob was only too happy to throw at Pope Petra Khan's caravan. armored peacekeepers wielding shields and stun sticks had erected barricades but could not stop the continuous rain of rocks upon Petra's bodyguards and pack camels. Cushioned within pillows and dark draperies that were too hot for the rift's desert climate, Petra rode in a litter carried by 10 eunuchs. Across from her sat her mentor and predecessor as Pope, Slova IV, who was 50 years her senior. His hawkish Asian features still unlined in his 70th year tightened with apprehension. The screaming mob threatened to burst through the phalanx of peacekeepers at any second. Petra sighed as she observed herself burning an effigy. "Of course you want to kill us," she thought. "We're the last Kaonites anywhere, but I wonder who will be left for you to hate once we're gone." She jerked back from the open window as a rock landed in the dust nearby. Straightening her tall miter hat, she said to Slova, "I'm surprised there's any peacekeepers here at all." She had to shout to be heard. Slova shook his head.
"The peacekeepers are always prepared for our Hajj."
"Yes, but I think the minister of one god would be happy to let the public lynch us." Petra watched Slova for the umpteenth time check the safety of the golden chest between their feet. It contained the ceremonial halo and bracelets which they would need to perform the sacrament once they reached Noah's temple.
"The one god minister is just one member of the All Council," Slova said, "and they haven't sanctioned our lynching yet. Until the Andatus, we'll enjoy their protection like everyone else."
Petra watched a peacekeeper jab his stun stick into the neck of a turbaned woman who collapsed to be trampled by her comrades. The mob reminded her of frenzied flesh dogs ready to devour prisoners at Dallas Coliseum.
"The council may indeed arrest us sooner rather than later," Petra said. "Did you see this?"
Without looking away from the crowd, she shoved today's bulletin paper at Slova. He glanced at it and cursed. Since the All Council controlled the media, a negative political cartoon was as good as an impending death sentence. It depicted Pope Petra tied to a stake, staring at her grinning executioner labeled All Council, who held a torch to the wood piled beneath her feet. The logs were labeled with the names of holocausts, inquisitions, crusades, and slave trades initiated by Kaonites when they were in power. As the pile grew deeper, each stratum of wood represented another century going back for two millennia, all the way to the first century AK. The implication was that now that the historically repressed one-godders controlled the world government, it was time for revenge. The one-godders had been systematically wiping out the Order of Khan for 100 years. The canvas over Petra's head made thump-thump sounds as rocks landed on it. A eunuch gasped and the litter suddenly dropped on one side. Slova fell on top of her. Shouting in Mantu, the eunuch struggled to hold the litter upright. Slova heaved himself back onto the seat and said, "Perhaps we should have delayed the..." A rock flew in through the window and smashed his skull.
"Slova!"
The eunuchs dropped the litter, and the popes and their golden chest tumbled onto the ground amid a heap of pillows and canvas. Petra struggled for air as she climbed out of the mess. Around her, peacekeepers fired automatic weapons into the roaring crowd, which was still overpowering them with rocks and sticks. She watched in dumb horror as two boys climbed over a dead officer to plunge daggers into a Kaonite bodyguard. A peacekeeper blew their heads off with a concussion gun. Petra had lost her hat and blood poured down her face from a wound she didn't remember receiving. Peacekeepers and Kaonites had formed a C-shaped perimeter between her and the mob. Dizzy, she now saw they had reached the foot of Noah's temple, really just a stone altar at the foot of Cliff Sinai. The temple was the supposed place where Noah had summoned the great Khan. It was appropriate she die here. Drunk with pain, Petra stumbled over a fallen eunuch of brick litter. She sobbed when she saw Slova partly submerged in the heap. His gaze, fixed in death, rested on the altar of summoning. Ignoring a rock that whizzed by an inch from her ear, Petra knelt and opened the golden chest which lay in the dust by his body. She withdrew the ceremonial bracelets and halo engraved with the crisscrosses of Khan's sacred seal, and then climbed the temple steps. The battle raged on behind her.
"Put your faith in the one god!" a woman screamed.
Petra knew they would overwhelm her protectors in moments.
"So this is how it ends. The end of Khan. We were the last ones."
Turning her back on the crowd, Petra faced the altar of summoning. She put on the diamond-crusted halo and bracelets, raised her hands, and began the invocation as Noah had 2,000 years before.
"Akse Ji Khan!"
A cheer arose behind her. Petra knew the mob had defeated the last of her defenders.
Aksay Mito Khan!
As prescribed by the sacrament, Petra nodded vigorously, as if saying yes to Khan's boundless grace, Slova had taught her in childhood, then pointed to the heavens.
Aktay Sen! Aide Den!
A heavy rock slammed into her back and Petra collapsed. The bracelet on her left wrist scraped across the ground, breaking its delicate golden chain. Crisscross-shaped bracelet links scattered. With the wind knocked out of her, Petra raised her head to the altar and gasped the next word of the sacrament.
Reap.
A woman, screaming in triumph, climbed the temple steps. Petra shut her eyes. Then, the whomp-whomp-whomp of a levitchopper suddenly echoed off the canyon walls, followed by the staccato of wing cannons firing. Petra looked up in time to see the woman disappear in a spray of blood. Other people had reached the steps, and they, too, went down in splashes of red. Men and children alike flattened themselves on the ground and ran for cover.
This lynching has not been approved by the All Council,
a voice said through the levitchopper's talk boxes.
Disperse at once.
The pilot made his point with another burst of gunfire that strafed the line of impacts in front of the temple steps. Hardly able to breathe through the pain, Petra watched the levitchopper move to hover directly overhead. It bore the black crest of the All Council. Doors fell open in the levitchopper's belly, and a mouth-shaped cargo net dropped onto her. Metal teeth snapped shut and scooped her into its cocoon. It hauled her into the air. In minutes, Noah's Temple was a receding battlefield hundreds of feet below. The cabinet ministers who comprised the All Council, the world's highest governing body, were so paranoid that they lived in hiding around the globe. Governing via telewindows, they likely had never met each other in person. The cargo net had electroshocked Petra to sleep. After an indeterminate period, she awoke in an undignified heap in the Chamber of Faces, the All Council's fabled meeting room. An amplified voice said,
Our next order of business is criminal case 44-7006. Madam Bailiff, has the defendant been awakened?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
A spotlight shone down from a distant ceiling and illuminated Petra where she lay. She was in a circular pit, and the minister's seats ringed the top more than 20 feet above. The seats were actually telewindows that showed each minister from chin to eyebrows.
Petra Khan, the grievous character of the Khanate religious order, has required that you be subpoenaed to this hearing of the All Council, bypassing all lower bodies. On behalf of the Khanates, you are here to answer primary charges of historical war crimes and genocide and secondary retroactive charges of sedition and blasphemy. How do you plead?
Petra shakily stood up. Her head was fuzzy.
Charges?
The bailiff interjected.
The defendant will enter a plea or summarily be judged guilty.
But that was centuries ago.
She spoke, although she knew her fate was already sealed.
You can't convict me for crimes committed by my ancestors?
Let the record show the defendant pleads not guilty.
A new voice, a man, cleared his throat.
I'd like to rebut the defendant's conduct.
The chair recognizes the minister of the judiciary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This council does indeed have jurisdiction in matters of historical justice, Ms. Khan. In State v. Comet, we reinterpreted Executive Power 2 of the Articles of Consolidation in order to do so. You've further been brought here under authority of One God, Euro 2 Resolution 10.05 Beta, the repeal of the Multicultural Tolerance Amendment. I further direct your attention to...
That will do, thank you.
Yes, sir, I surrender the floor.
Patrick Khan... Do you deny these charges?
No, I don't deny them, but...
Let the record show the defendant has replaced our plea of not guilty with guilty, and that an additional charge of felony perjury is hereby entered against her.
Wait a minute!
Mr. Chairman,
a new voice said,
I move the defendant be judged guilty on all counts.
I said, wait a minute, this isn't fair. Something hard hit the back of Petra's head, and a second later she was regarding the spotlight from the floor. The bailiff's remarkably expressionless voice came from far away.
The defendant will remain silent for the verdict.
The minister of one god has made a motion,
the chairman said.
I second that motion,
said the minister of the judiciary.
The motion is seconded, and I add a third vote of guilty. Therefore, the motion is carried. The defendant will be placed under house arrest until lynching by her local magistrate.
Petra lost consciousness. When she awoke alone in the Con Vatican, Petra discovered that her home had been raided. The oldest surviving Conite monastery in the northwest continent, her ancestors had sighted the Vatican inside a natural cave near the Rift Canyon. They had built it deeply in order to be closer to Great Khan himself, who traditions said lived underground. The cave also had lent itself well to security. Until now. Dizzy and rubbing the sore lump behind her left ear, Petra walked among the Vatican's overturned confessionals. She found irreplaceable 500-year-old scrolls stuffed into feces pots. She sobbed when she saw blood stains on the entry hall's marble floors. At least the lynch mob had taken the victims elsewhere to finish them.
The defendant will be placed under house arrest.
The All Council intended for her to stay here, alone, until the mob, the local magistrate, lit its torches and returned. She ran for the exit. Just outside the door on either side awaited two honeycomb-shaped generators that hummed to life as she passed between them. They drove what felt like an invisible spike through her head from ear to ear. Screaming, Petra returned to the cave interior. When the pain subsided, she probed the lump behind her ear. She now noticed a peculiar hardness in its center. A pain inducer to keep her inside. As Petra expected, additional generators waited outside the other exits, effectively trapping her. She had heard about these leashes from Slova, who'd been well acquainted with the persecution of the world's Khanite leaders. Embedded in her skull's temporal bone, the pain inducer could only be removed with a surgeon's skill. The beauty of the system's design, at least from an all-council perspective, was that lynch mobs could come and go at will. Petra's first visitor entered as she was boiling water to treat the cut on her face. With two hands, she heaved the water pot off the fireplate and began to throw it at the man walking through the kitchen doorway. "Hello?" the old man said. Petra stopped short, nearly sloshing her wrists with hot water. Lynchers didn't say hello nor come alone and during the day. She put the pot down.
"Oh, dear me," the man said. "Your Holiness, I'm sorry if I startled you."
Petra said nothing as he placed a weathered docu-case on the floor and steepled his fingers in greeting. Dressed in simple robes and moccasins, the man had a stomach that spoke of too much food and a graying beard of too little bathing.
"I'm Halio, an astronomer."
He pointed skyward as if she didn't know the term.
I'm here because, well..."
Petra realized he was nervous. Of course he was, being here alone talking to a condemned prisoner. Where were her manners? She was still, or was, the Pope, after all.
"I'm sorry. Would you sit down?"
She righted an overturned chair.
"I was going to..." She glanced at the water pot. "I was going to make tea. Would you like some?"
"Oh, yes, thank you."
Halio sat.
"I'm sorry if I disturbed you, your Holiness. You probably wish to spend your remaining time in seclusion preparing yourself. But this is my last chance to talk to someone who might listen to me."
Tears stung Petra's eyes as she poured water through a tea strainer and brought the old man his cup.
Not at all. And please, there's no order of Khan left for me to lead, so it's unnecessary to call me your Holiness."
Halio's eyes widened over the brim of his cup, and he continued in a subdued voice.
"I was raised a Khanite, you know, your Holiness.
Petra will do."
"Petra. But that was 47 years ago. Then my wife converted me to one godism. I stayed with it after she died because of all the,
you know, the crisscross laws? You don't have to honeycut your talk for me, Mr. Hollio. Hollio nodded and placed his cup on the floor. He started rummaging through his docu-case.
I'm not afraid of ostracism, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't have come here.
Of course.
But ostracism's partly my problem, you see. No one will take me seriously.
Rather than answer, Petra sipped her tea. She still had no idea why he was here, but didn't care. It was nice just to have company.
It never made sense to me, one godism, all the talk about one god up in the sky. It's my job to watch the sky. I think by now I would have seen one god through my view scope. don't you think it's clever how they say pitchfork thrower lives underground where Great Khan lives?
The one godders claim their Torkor Bible predates the Khan Bible. So maybe they're right. Hollio stopped digging to stare at her.
How can you say that? You're the Pope.
Petra crossed her legs and gazed down into her cup. She never would have had such a frank conversation, not even with Slova, a day ago, but this was likely the last day of her life. It's difficult to have faith under the circumstances. Diving back into his docu-case, Hollio brought out a wrinkled envelope. He handed it to her.
Maybe this will make you feel differently.
The envelope contained several photos that appeared to be telewindow images. Since Hollio was an astronomer, she guessed the bright splotches in the sea of black were astronomical phenomena. The overlaid grid and down to the second one-god-year time index seemed to confirm this.
I took those myself a month ago, Hollio said, but the objects entered the Earth's penumbra and I haven't seen them since.
Objects?
That's what I think they are, but the Ministry of Science has this bird shit on my lenses.
Hollio shrugged.
But I know what I saw for two nights running. And the difference in position between those sightings leads me to believe they're coming closer.
Sighing, Petra handed the photos back to him.
Very interesting.
Hollio scowled. He slapped the photos onto the floor.
No! More than interesting. Deadly. They're meteors. And if they're as big as I think they are, the one goddess chanting days are numbered, as are ours.
Petra nodded. So you came here because Great Khan the Protector saved the Earth from such cataclysms?
No, yes, I don't know.
Hollio bent and retrieved the photos. Feeling guilty, Petra helped him.
I'm sorry to bother you, Miss Petra. I just don't know what to do. I was hoping for some popish guidance, I guess. Maybe a prayer.
Clutching his docu-case to his chest, Hollio hurried from the kitchen. Petra followed him, drowning in guilt. What a failure she was. Hollio was just an old man, yet he'd put himself at considerable risk just to consult the supposed last keeper of his boyhood faith. As they crossed the crisscross seal in the entry hall, she said, "Do you still consider yourself a Khanite, Mr. Hollio?" Still hugging his docu-case, Hollio stopped halfway through the arched stone doors to face her.
Pardon me, yes, pardon me, but I'm old, and we all look for our safety belts at my age, even if they're made of smoke.
He stepped outside, then turned back. The desert sun cast dusty shadows on his beard. Petra envied his ability to stand there, unaffected by the leash generators.
I've always wondered about one thing, though.
Yes?
Why has the All Council forbidden archaeological digs at Noah's Temple?
Petra frowned. I suppose out of... Well, no, it wouldn't be out of respect for the Order.
Exactly.
Hollio bowed his head.
Can't walk with you, Miss Petra.
He climbed into his roller car and sped away. With dusk approaching, Petra abandoned her futile attempts to clean the mess left by the last lynch mob. She didn't know why she was doing it other than to keep busy, to keep her eyes off the chronoteller, which could not reveal how many hours remained in her life. Earlier, she had begun a letter to no one in particular. the last testament of Pope Petra Khan, last servant of Great Khan, the protector, but had given up when she didn't know what to write. Such missives had already been written by persecuted Khanites who'd done it better. Perhaps a final rant about the evils of the All Council, or a theological defense of the Khanite faith, which she was no longer certain she held. No one would read it. She was struck by how young she was and how little she had experienced. Someone more heroic should be here, she thought. Not a 20-year-old girl. Slova chose me unwisely. Slova. Petra felt the stab of grief again. He'd rescued her from the orphan kennels when she was barely 3 years old and had taken her in and raised her. As if she were his own daughter, Slova had groomed her to be his successor as Pope, and then had bestowed her with the title when he reached his 69th birthday, the age of senility, as dictated by Khanite dogma. And Petra, despite her own suppressed misgivings about her faith, had accepted the office out of love for him. But Slova was gone now, and so was everyone else she'd ever called family. Perhaps the only reason she continued moving about, even at this late hour of her life, was that if Slova were here, he would have been doing the same thing. In fact, she felt his spirit with her as she moved through the Vatican's caves, an example of strength and bravery, although he was invisible. As for the old astronomer's visit that afternoon, she was thankful. But she knew that even if she'd been the regal figure Hollio had expected, it would have changed nothing. Not interested in food, she dug through the wreckage until she found a bronze chest the raiders had missed. Unlocking it, she brought out one of the rarest books in the world, which, ironically, was probably valueless except to her. This 6th century AK copy of the Holy Bible of Khan predated Pope Luther's new definitive edition of 1300 years ago, but somehow it had survived in better shape than manuscripts produced later. Printed on plastic and electrostatic ink, the book was an amazing technological achievement for its time. She'd heard that most artifacts from the post-American period displayed similar stunning development. Some archaeologists even claimed that the level of technological advancement actually increased as one went back in time. It contained the story of Noah, of course, but not the long tracts of parables, psalms, and letters of Pope Luther's edition. Petra enjoyed its pre-Ameristan alphabet and grammar. It contained perhaps the last surviving example of ancient American English, and Petra found that she was one of the few people alive who could read it. Aside from what it left out, making it considerably thinner than Pope Luther's, this Bible copy was notable for what it included. Accounts of the early cataclysmic period, when the world's nation-states had struggled in vain to destroy the meteors and comets headed for Earth. Its stories and artwork included a fair amount of fantasy, such as arrow-hurling space angels called Comsats, and fire devils called Nucoids, characters that Pope Luther, who was attempting to revitalize a dying theocracy, had sensibly excluded from his new edition. The Book of Salvation, the final installment of the Bible's initial testament, also contained a wonderful painting, dropped from Luther's edition, of course, that depicted Great Khan as a colossus, towering over the world's cities as he smote meteorites from the sky. Khan wore the crisscross engraved halo and bracelets that his disciples had gone on to imitate with their jewels and precious metals. In this traditional interpretation of Khan, the crisscross symbol covered his golden body and the halo concealed his eyes, but Petra thought he looked less ridiculous than the three-headed one god, who wore his heart and a thorn crown upon his sleeve and who carried a scimitar between his teeth. Pope Luther had succeeded brilliantly at his ultimate goal. As the new definitive Bible gained popularity, so had the Khanite order, which subsequently founded a world government that lasted 1,000 years until succumbing to the influence of one godism. The old Bible also contained what Petra regarded as a more correct version of the sacrament she'd begun at Noah's temple, and which was a main component of a Khanite religious service. The instructions were more complicated and lengthy than the Lutheran versions, filled with extensive optional tracts based on Great Khan's perceived emotional state, but Petra loved the order hidden within the archaic complexity, a puzzle to be solved. As a matter of pride, she'd memorized as much of the old instructions as possible, a task, she was now sorry to admit to herself, she had tackled as more of an intellectual challenge than a spiritual one. What a waste of time, she now thought. With what was surely her last night on earth upon her, Petra succumbed to exhaustion and lay down on a church pew. Sometime later, an explosion hurled her to the floor. Snapping awake, Petra jumped to her feet. The lynchers, were they here? She squinted as the lights blinked off, on, off, and back on. No, not a bomb, as she'd first thought. At least, not in here. It was difficult to detect a relative difference in the wreckage around her, but she saw that more tapestries had fallen off the walls and additional fonts had overturned. She had an instant to register the sound of thunder before being thrown down again. This time, the lights went off and stayed off, leaving her in absolute darkness until the backup generators kicked in. Petra coughed from the cloud of rock dust that had descended from the cave ceilings. Were the lynchers firing concussion charges? Why not just come inside and grab her? Surely they weren't afraid of the resistance posed by a single unarmed woman. Or was something else going on? Petra ran for the main exit. And what she saw in the night sky made her gasp. Streaks of fire, like scratches and black stone, traced long white trails from heaven to earth. Hundreds of them were appearing in the eastern sky to her left and streaking down into the greater rift area. The brief mushrooms of flame created by their impacts illuminated huge clouds of dust being splashed into the air. Looking like comets, the meteorites falling nearest to Petra made sonic booms as they tore through the air. Halia's photos. He'd been right. Although the seeing ridge was 2 miles to the west, the concussion of an impact there smashed Petra against the stone archway where she stood. The taste of blood filled her mouth. Outside the doors, the leash generators buzzed and crackled as one of the honeycomb towers toppled over. Petra saw her chance. She knew nothing about the leashes except for what Slova had told her. If she was wrong and the generators were still working, then she doubted she would make it back into the cave this time, but she was now running too fast out the door. A chapel's length from the Vatican, Petra stopped and faced the entrance. She sighed in relief. But now what would she do? She had nowhere to go, and one couldn't survive long in the rift area without food and shelter. The All Council would win one way or the other. Petra sat down in the dust to think. A roller car's front lamps suddenly shone on the Vatican's doors. Petra stood up as the cones of light swung around to find her. Another meteorite impact made her knees buckle, but she maintained her footing. She was determined to face her lynchers with dignity. A dozen feet away, the car stopped. Petra shielded her eyes against the front lamp's glare as the driver got out.
Your Holiness! Come on, let's get out of here!
Nearly fainting with relief, Petra ran toward Mr. Hollio's voice. The following is from the Holy Bible of Khan, 6th century AK version, pre-Lutheran, Book of Noah, chapter 41, verses 21 to 24. Hear these sinners, for the Lord thy Khan hath commanded thee not to invoke his name in vain. The wicked shalt not summon him in times of tranquility, nor shall the hands of the unrighteous touch the holy accoutrements. But when the earth quakes in fear, splitting the doors of his temple, shall Khan rise up. Behold the rainbow springing from Khan's pots of gold, the token of this new covenant. Petra regarded Mr. Hollio as he drove his roller car into the Rift Canyon. He hadn't said 10 words since picking her up a half hour ago, too intent on steering around fallen rocks. Overhead, the meteorite shower continued its assault.
Sacred piss!
He cursed and locked up his brakes. Petra tensed as the boulder rolled across the road in front of them.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Holiness. I have dirty lips.
I'll forgive you as long as you just call me Petra.
Ollio nodded and shifted back into gear.
I guess I could. You remind me of my Dell in a way. But to me, you'll always be the Pope.
Petra figured the silence had been cracked, so she scanned the sky and gorge walls on either side, judging whether it was safe to distract him with talk. Yes, she said, deciding that it was. I am, unfortunately, the Pope. Is that why you're driving us to Noah's Temple? Well, Ollio grinned sheepishly.
I'm sorry, I didn't ask first, but it's a logical place to go.
Petra bit off her retort. Of course it was. The Pope of the Khanite Order was supposed to go there in times of trouble, perform the sacrament of summoning, and everything would be okay, right? But she was thankful someone had come along to take her away from the Vatican. She just hoped Hollio wouldn't be too disappointed when Great Khan failed to appear.
I don't even have a gold halo or bracelet, she said. How am I supposed to do the sacrament?
Hollio didn't say anything for a while, too busy threading the roller car through the obstacle course of boulders. Dust granules the size of sand began falling on the roof and view window, prompting him to activate the window's water jets.
I'm no priest, just a scientist, he finally said, but it seems to me that Noah didn't have any gold or diamonds.
Amazed, Petra watched tears fall from his eyes and drop into his beard. She reached for him, moved to perform a blessing like Slova would have done, but thought it would be hypocritical of her.
She settled for gripping his shoulder and saying,
thank you.
Nodding, Hollio reached up and squeezed her fingers.
Remember what I said about no archaeological digs at the temple?
Yes.
There's something special about that place. Always has been, and the All Council knows it. I think they're afraid someone might poke around and discover there really is a Khan.
If Petra was amazed by the faith that could come from a scientist, she was even more amazed by what awaited them at the temple site. A crowd of people had gathered, not many, only 24 or so, but it was still a crowd. Petra thought they were a lynch mob until they steepled their hands in greeting, praying and crying as she emerged from the roller car. The belatedly faithful, they gathered around her.
Give her room! Give her room!
Hollio shouted as if Petra were carrying a bomb beneath her robe. Embarrassed, she kept her eyes on the ground as she waded through the crowd. The same hands that had only yesterday thrown rocks at her now touched her robe as they passed. For the first time in her 5 years as a priest and then pope, Petra felt like a carnival attraction. And more than that, undeserving. A fake. But they expected something, some kind of comfort, and Petra knew she'd better give it to them. She was here on borrowed time. If not for the meteorite shower, this same crowd by now would be pelting her with stones or crucifying her upon the Vatican's own crisscross tree. Petra climbed the steps of Noah's temple, then faced her audience. Now solemn and quiet, they radiated hope and expectation. They startled when another meteorite landed, its flash illuminating the tear-streaked grime on their faces. A sermon or blessing was out of the question, Petra realized. So was a hymn. These people wanted a miracle. And they were going to die horrible deaths because they were out here in the open watching her. Petra fought a surge of despair as she turned to the altar of summoning and raised her hands.
Axe G-Con.
A trio of meteorites suddenly shattered the cannon walls a half mile away. The dais undulated. A roar and white flash deafened and blinded her. Petra's vision returned in a few seconds, and her hearing a while later. She found herself lying upon the dais. Fragments of stone and debris were raining down from the impacts and being shaken from the cliffs. Standing up, she shouted,
"Go! Run for cover!"
The dais caved in. Petra fell into the hole. The long plank-like stones that crisscrossed beneath the altar broke in such a way that Petra slid rather than plummeted into the exposed cavity. Although she fell at least 20 feet, she was only bruised when she reached the bottom. It was as if the temple's builders had designed the dais to collapse in this manner, like
folding shutters, the plank stones each touched down in exactly the same angle and broke along the same seams. The pieces stacked neatly upon one another and were diverted away from the room's center and from Petra by a floor that slanted toward the walls. Like her, the altar of summoning landed intact. Petra's congregation appeared at the rim of the opening above. They lay on their stomachs and shone down glow wands.
"Petra!"
Hollio called. Petra stood up and slapped dust off her robe. "I'm okay." She realized with a start that she was trapped. The plank stones had all broken apart, aided, she now saw, by evenly spaced ledges that ringed the walls like teeth. And the ledges were too far apart to use as handholds. She couldn't climb out, nor could her born-again Khanites come down.
"Does anyone have a rope?"
Hollio said. The others whispered to each other, then shook their heads. More impacts rattled the ground, and in the circle of earliest morning sky still visible, Petra saw the trails of incoming meteorites.
"You should seek shelter, all of you," she said.
She had a brief, unpleasant flashback to the Chamber of Faces, talking to people similarly arrayed above her. The crowd's hesitation was broken by another impact that shook dust from the walls.
"Thank you. Khan bless you," someone said as they went away.
Hollio stayed, shining down his glow wand.
"You too," Petra said. "I'll be fine."
"I got you into this. I'm not leaving you."
Exasperated, Petra looked about for shelter that she could point to and assure Hollio she'd be okay, even if she knew deep down that she was already dead. The ledges that had helped break apart the plank stones were wide enough and certainly sturdy enough for this purpose, but she would have preferred something more substantial. Then, beneath one of the ledges, Petra saw a door, probably to a tomb. Perhaps it was Noah's, or Khan's. The door was closed.
"I see an open door," Petra said. "It goes into a room. I'll be fine in there."
Hollio glanced over his shoulder as another meteorite landed nearby.
All right.
He tossed down his glow wand. Caught off guard, Petra barely managed to catch it from breaking on the floor.
"But what if the ceiling caves in on you?"
After a moment's hesitation, Petra steepled her hands and bowed her head, the formal gesture of departure and gratitude.
"Then there's no place I'd rather die."
She ducked under the ledge, out of Hollio's sight, and flattened herself against the door. She turned off the glow wand as if she disappeared into the tomb. And Hollio soon left. In the silence that followed, shattered periodically by explosions in the Rift Canyon, Petra flicked the wand back on and examined the door. Engraved with Khan's crisscross seal and with no apparent knobs or locks, it was made of the same gray rock as the walls and plank stones. It protruded several feet from the wall beneath the ledge, making Petra think that instead of a door that opened, it was intended only as an obstruction. She pushed it, pulled, tried to grab its edges. The stone had to weigh half a ton. How was she supposed to move it? She needed a compression hammer to slice it in half. She recalled a passage from the Book of Noah in her 6th century Bible, a verse that Pope Luther had predictably cut from the new edition, something about Khan rising when the earth quakes in fear, splitting the doors of his temple. The phrase had been packaged with a prohibition against invoking Khan unnecessarily, and with an implication that the wicked and undeserving be kept out. It had stuck in her mind because of its use of temple, and the fact that she lived near the oldest Khanite temple in the world. She had decided long ago that it must be symbolic, and certainly couldn't refer to Noah's temple, which, at least above the ground, had no doors. Petra looked up at the opening where the temple dais had been. The earth had indeed quaked, splitting the doors, or the floor, of the temple. Could the floor have been constructed to be quake-sensitive and only quake-sensitive, so that no one would discover this room until the ground shook? As during a cataclysm. A chill swept over her. What would happen when this door down here also split, revealing Great Khan in all his glory, and when she would look into his oversized eyes and realize she'd been a stupid, faithless fool? Sighing, Petra shook her head and looked closer at the door. She knocked, half expecting Khan to answer, and thought the stone sounded solid, not hollow, no space on the other side.
which wasn't to say that a space wasn't there. Were those hairline seams she saw in the door? Perhaps something was supposed to have fallen on it and split it open. Petra looked up and saw the overhanging ledge, then walked back to the center of the chamber to look higher. Against another ledge rested one of the plank stones. Its trajectory hadn't been as perfect as the others. If it had landed on the protruding door, it might indeed have split it open. In fact, Petra realized, since the plank's lower end rested on the floor like a partially fallen tree, she might be able to push it into completing its fall. But no, the plank would simply land on the lower ledge, which protected the door. She sighed. Again, she recalled the Bible verse, and after a long moment, believed she remembered a fragment. The wicked shall not summon him in times of tranquility, nor shall the hands of the unrighteous touch the holy accoutrements. Strange. It was as if Khan were the one who needed protection, and who wished not to be exploited. Could Noah, who supposedly built this temple and wrote the Book of Noah, have constructed ruses and traps to foil grave robbers? Perhaps then the lower ledge was a ruse to discourage them from pushing the plank down upon the door as she was contemplating. Only a holy person like her, who understood Khan's point of view as described by that verse, would bother to push the plank down anyway and risk blocking the tomb's entrance further. Perhaps, Petra thought, Noah had secretly weakened the lower ledge so that when the plank landed on it, it would break off and itself split the door. She grunted in frustration. It was impossible to psychoanalyze across a gulf of 2 millennia. But it didn't matter. She didn't have the tools or strength to go after the door directly. Seeing no alternative, Petra threw her weight against the plank. It fell. And as expected, the lower ledge broke off under the impact. But it didn't destroy the door. Instead, it broke in half upon the stone, falling down to either side. The plank also broke. Petra groaned. But then she saw that where the ledge had been now gaped a dark hole, an entrance into a room. She gasped. The ledge had indeed been a ruse, but so had the ornately carved doorstone. Demolishing the door with a compression hammer would have accomplished nothing. Behind it was probably nothing but solid rock, or far back, a decoy burial chamber. Better equipped raiders tunneling through the door would not have realized that the true prize was mere feet above their heads. Smiling, Petra climbed on top of the doorstone and crawled through the exposed opening. The musty air of centuries past, or was it the breath of Khan, ruffled her hair as she entered. Where was the sarcophagus? Hanging from wires in the center of an otherwise empty, round chamber was a golden suit of clothing embroidered with Khan's crisscross seal. It sparkled in the light of her glow wand like a phantom. Unlike Petra's robe, it was form-fitting, as if it were Khan's molted skin, and hung upright in a lifelike posture. But she dwelt on this for only a moment, because her gaze was drawn to the irregular hat that hung above the clothing and the black gloves that hung in front of it. They were oddly familiar. The gold crisscross pattern encircling the glove's wrists reminded her of the holy bracelets of a Khanite priest. And the hat was more like a thick crown, being open at the top and with the pattern encircling the brow, again like the holy halo she was used to. Petra started trembling as she realized what these were. She dropped and lay prostrate with her nose to the floor. They were Great Khan's own clothes. The picture in the old Bible had been accurate when it showed Khan towering over the cities, the crisscross symbol covering his golden body and wearing the holy halo and bracelets. But the Khan in that picture had to be hundreds of feet tall. The golden suit before her was only man-sized, or had the Bible simply exaggerated? Petra looked up, puzzled. She rose from the cold stone to sit back on her haunches. For the first time, she noticed how this room dampened the shock waves of the meteorite barrage before they reached her. And here, it felt more like a thunderstorm than the teeth-jarring explosions she'd experienced earlier. The golden suit. Would Great Khan materialize and put it on? Or perhaps she was expected to don the clothing herself. Nor shall the hands of the unrighteous touch the holy accoutrements, the Bible had said. Petra took a deep breath and stood up. I'm not unrighteous, she said, but she knew that she was. As she approached, Petra expected Khan to appear and strike her dead. "What are you doing?" she imagined Slova saying, his horror as she now touched the rubbery fabric, his increasingly frantic outrage as she inserted first one leg, then the other. Petra shared the imagined Slova's outrage, but it was as if her body had disconnected from her will, her curiosity overpowering her fear. After she closed the suit by sliding a metal clasp up to her neck, wondering why the ancient fabric didn't disintegrate, a mild electric shock coursed through her. She screamed, but before she could take it back off, the suit came alive. The crisscross pattern began to glow, and the fabric constricted, sucking itself to her body. Petra held her breath, waiting for Khan to smite her. After a moment, she judged that she was safe, and her conviction grew that she was doing the right thing. The expected thing. Next, she put on the gloves, and when nothing untoward happened, pulled the halo down to her head. But the halo wouldn't sit properly on her brow, and its bulky part didn't fit over the back of her head. The jeweled halo she'd worn in church had been perfectly shaped headbands, the same thickness all the way around, so this baffled her. Again, she remembered the picture in the old Bible. Khan had worn his halo over his eyes. Petra reversed the halo, and now saw two eye-shaped crystals on the inside of the thicker plate. When she put it on, with the dark crystals covering her eyes, the halo fit perfectly. Petra started crying. What was she doing? Did she think she was Khan? Oh, my Khan, my Khan, my Khan, she mumbled as her fingers tensed with electric tingles. And in the darkness, glowing words suddenly appeared, seeming to hover a foot in front of her face. And a disembodied voice spoke. Perhaps it was the voice of Khan.
Command entered. Hey, me Khan, me Khan, me Khan. Error. Command not recognized.
Petra screamed. What was happening?
Command entered. Error. Command not recognized. Input errors detected. Reinitializing user interface. Please stand by. Please stand by. Please stand by.
The words were in ancient American English. Its pre-Amerispan alphabet and words shared many characteristics with that of her 6th century Bible, but Petra understood very little of what she saw and heard. One mystery ended, however, when the words vanished to be replaced by one huge word that completely filled the space in front of her. Thermavex. The X at its end was huge and lavishly illustrated, at least 5 times as large as the other letters. Next to it hung a tiny R in a circle, and below it more strange words, which a different disembodied voice spoke aloud.
Thermavex Protective Control Grid Systems, Inc., Grand Canyon, Arizona. In cooperation with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, United Nations, and World Anti-Meteorite Protection Syndicate, unauthorized access to this system is strictly prohibited and is punishable by international and military law. Use of this system requires an Andromeda-level security clearance and a neuromotor endurance rating of at least 12.05. If you have activated this station by mistake, disengage immediately and report to your commanding officer.
Oh my Khan, Petra said again. Was Thermavex the true name of Khan? The illustrated X was Khan's crisscross seal found on everything holy, including altar tablecloths, priest's robes, the Vatican's entry seal, the golden suit she wore, and of course the halo and bracelets.
Hello, user. Welcome to the Thermavex Protective Control Grid. This station was last accessed 3-1 July 2415. 17:34:03 Greenwich Mean Time. After a dormancy period of 85045.0201 days. The current date is 2 August 4277 23:15:28 Greenwich Mean Time. This station is overdue for a maintenance check. Please notify the system manager. Geothermal power taps are operating within normal range. Your interface options for navigation of the Thermavex Virtual Data Semantic Network are as follows. 1. Keyboard mouse. 2. Neural interface. Experimental. Please check with system manager. 3. Gesture vocal sequence. 4. Optical character recognition. 5. Remote management. Your user input predilection is as follows. 3. Adjust your vocal sequence.
Petra only had time to decipher the first few words before they vanished again and the voice stopped speaking. A large table made of a rainbow appeared before her. Multicolored pots and baskets materialized and arrayed themselves on the table. The pots were filled with gold, sparkling stars, and wads of crumpled paper. What looked like one of the Comsat angels, pictured in the old Bible, appeared by her elbow, flashing red as if demanding her attention. Again, the Bible had described everything accurately, the rainbow springing from Khan's pots of gold. This was it. This was Khan's covenant being fulfilled. The pots had English names that, although Petra could sound them out, made little sense. Names like energy transfer, EMS coordination, communication, other, and LAN. Petra could see her body now, but it looked ephemeral and composed entirely of the golden Khanite crisscrosses. Her fingers sparkled with energy. Frightened, she removed the halo and found herself still standing in the featureless room. Her body and hands now appeared normal, although still clothed in the golden suit and dark gloves. The floor thrummed beneath her feet as if Great Khan were stirring. At last, Petra realized that what she saw inside the halo was illusory. Or perhaps Great Khan had lent his god vision for her to peer into some parallel plane of existence. Petra put the halo back on and again saw the rainbow table with its pots. The air crackled and she heard music. An exotic blend of electronic tritones, voices, angels, she wondered, and drums, which accompanied each of her movements in a heavy diatonalism. A black space like that she'd seen before appeared between her and the rainbow table, and inside glowed the word. The voice spoke.
Command?
Petra waited, but nothing more happened. Laboriously, she deciphered it. The interrogative curl punctuating the word led her to believe the table was asking for orders. But what, she began, and didn't finish her sentence. What would she do?
Command entered. Paro K. Error. Command not recognized.
Petra slowly plowed through the ancient words. But what kind of words were those? Paro K. Oh, it... Of course. It was phonetically rendering her Amerispan words. You're really a machine, aren't you?
Command entered. Estamakana aren't you, Bardad. Error. Command not recognized. If you require assistance, open the LAN menu and dial M for system manager. Command?
Petra exhaled slowly. A machine? Gods didn't use machines, or had Khan created this for Noah to use? Despite all she'd witnessed that seemed to validate the Bible, faith and doubt pulled Petra in opposite directions like warring parents. The evil idea formed that Khan didn't exist at all, and instead had been conceived by simple-minded peasants who had worshipped the magic-like technology of a fallen civilization. She felt like taking off the halo, gloves, and golden suit and returning to the pit below the dais, making sure to jump head first in order to break her neck. Despite the room's cushioning design, the floor jolted from meteorite impact. Petra stumbled and lifted the halo from her eyes to look around. Still safe, but that one must have been huge to be felt in here. She imagined Halio and the others cowering in a cave as their world crumbled around them. Across the globe, one-godders and closet Khanites alike were probably ravaging their cities in panic as their buildings crumbled and their loved ones disappeared in rubble and flame. Petra knew many of them, had traveled and corresponded widely, and not all were one-godder lynchers. Some were friends. And although the majority of the world did indeed hate her, by the teachings of Khan, they were her responsibility. Petra turned the halo over in her hands and breathed a shuddering sigh. She was being selfish. Whether Khan existed or not, she'd sworn an oath the day she became Pope. All right, she said to herself. But I still don't know what to do. Had to think. Again, she looked at the crisscross emblem encircling her wrists like holy bracelets and at the hat that looked so much like a holy halo. The Bible had been right before, sort of. Could it offer guidance now? What did she normally do when wearing a halo and bracelets? It was worth a try. Petra put the halo back on. Standing straight, she raised her hands and began the sacrament of summoning. Axe G-Con!
Command entered. Access Geo-Con. Command recognized. Access geological control. Please stand by. Please stand by. Warning. System errors detected. Tectonic stress taps and grids 4, 9, 11, 13, 57, 58. Not responding to ignition pre-sequencers.
Like a volcano, the basket on the rainbow table labeled Geologic erupted a global map that enlarged over her. Portions of the eastern and northwest continents flashed yellow.
Operating efficiency at 64%. Notify system manager immediately.
Petra didn't know what any of this meant, nor did she stop to decipher the ancient words. Axe Metocon!
Command entered. Access Meteocon. Command recognized. Access meteorological control. Please stand by. Warning. System errors detected. Communication loss with 100% of cloud seeding towers, lightning spike initiators, glacial evaporators. Activating moon-based automatic backup systems. Please stand by. Communication link established. Checking username and password. Please stand by. Moon Gamma 1 responds.
Protocols authenticated. Moon systems booting, opening underground wall blast doors, raising directed energy cannons, solar energy prisms aligning. System will be operational in 1 minute.
Relative operating efficiency at 78%. Diagnostic evaluation recommended.
As this blur of ancient words scrolled within the black window and the voice continued to speak, additional grids flashed on the floating globe. Squiggly lines appeared between the globe and a floating moon that also rose from a basket.
Warning. System errors detected.
A glowing placard rose from the basket labeled EMS coordination and listed a series of numbers, each suffixed with MHZ.
Emergency medical systems not countersigning to call tones. Probable telecommunication disruptions and or personnel readiness failures. See signaling menu for other options. Control grid not operating at recommended efficiencies. Do you wish to proceed with system initialization?
Petra held her breath as she realized she'd been asked something. What was next in the sacrament? She closed her eyes against the swirling colors and tried to remember. Oh yes, Slova, the day he'd first shown her the 6th century Bible. He had pointed at the verse describing the ritual in the process, teaching her to love its minutia, and said, "Nod your head as if saying yes to Khan's boundless grace." Petra now nodded.
Command entered. Gesture. Command recognized. Affirmative. Proceeding with initialization. System will be operational in 0 minutes. Control grid ready. Command?
A pot labeled Wep Sen spewed a cloud of objects and letters that arranged themselves in a neat line overhead. A conite crisscross and the words tool belt appeared at its center. Petra's emotions swelled in her chest. She didn't comprehend most of this, but realized she didn't have to. All she needed was faith, and that had returned. Proceeding with the ritual, Petra pointed to heaven and realized she was pointing directly at the conite crisscross. The objects and the tool belt brightened in response. Acte Sen Iden Den!
Command entered. Active Sen Iden Den. Commands recognized. Activate sensors. Identify dangers. Please stand by. Moon-based telescopes coming online. Warning. Dangers detected in grids
1 through 98, 141 to 150, 168, 172, 180. Interstellar objects incoming through Van Allen Jones A2, A3, A4, B2, B4, B10.
As the words and numbers continued scrolling, telewindow-like images appeared upon the globe, showing real-time pictures perceived from outer space. The pinpricks of meteorites entering the atmosphere cover the Earth's face like pox sores. And here the sacrament of summoning, at least in the old Bible, diverged down any number of optional tracks based upon Great Khan's perceived mood and aspect. On Hajj Day, Petra had just begun one of these, entitled The Hand of Khan, speaking the word reap when she'd been hit with a rock.
Warning. Tidal wave detected.
The dark blotch representing the peaceful ocean detached from the globe and enlarged. Petra felt like she was flying as her perspective grew closer, zooming in upon an enormous hump of water approaching the northwest continent's western seaboard. she soon found herself standing upon a beach lit by brilliant morning sunlight. The tidal wave was not yet visible, but she felt its approach as wind on her skin. Behind her, in miniature, sprawled one of the Califri coastal cities. She didn't know which one. Its tallest skyscraper building only came up to her waist. Its factories and apartment complexes hemorrhaged flame and smoke, meteorite damage that tiny men and tiny machines struggled to contain. They didn't see the approaching tidal wave, but Petra thought they still had time to make it to bomb shelters if she could only warn them. "Oh, Khan," she groaned. As if hearing her, several of the men stopped and pointed. Petra looked down at herself. She was a colossus made up of sparkling crisscrosses. But there was no time for this. Seek shelter, she said. Tidal wave approaching, and heard her words echo off the buildings, sounding like the grating voice of the earth itself. The men abandoned the roller cars and water cannons to flee. Petra faced the ocean, and in seconds, the tidal wave appeared on the horizon. Even from her giant's perspective, the massive curtain of water dwarfed her. It would sweep over the coast in moments. What to do? In her mind, Petra ran through the optional sacramental tracks. The locusts, the pillar of fire, the angel of death, seeking imagery that might apply to this situation. Maybe the scriptures weren't relevant at all. The whore of Babylon, the seven-headed beast, the hand of Khan. Of course, the hand of Khan. Perhaps it was a metaphor for the shape of an approaching tidal wave. Except the scribes who dutifully copied and recopied the track through the ages hadn't known this. Petra extended her palms to the wave, hoping she'd selected the correct track. Read!
Command entered. Rep. Command recognized. Repulse.
Like hot air on the horizon of the Rift Canyon, the sky shimmered in a narrow line down from the half-moon still visible. It touched Petra's outstretched hands, then redirected toward the tidal wave. The shimmer spread over the face of the wave and arrested its forward motion. The water flushed in a frothy white.
"Read!"
Petra said. And the wave moved backward. It subsided into the heaving ocean. Petra continued saving the world for 16 more hours, well past the point of exhaustion. She called upon all of her knowledge as Pope, and correctly guessed at much she didn't know, to repulse more tidal waves, deaden earthquakes, contain dust clouds, and lift victims to safety. She even created small tidal waves of her own when necessary. For instance, she performed the Khanite rite of baptism to douse the greater western forest, extinguishing a fire that threatened cities and trees. She performed a track called Raise the Dead to erect natural barriers against volcanic lava flows. She enacted the Flaming Sword rite to evaporate the flood of a broken dam on the southern continent, the Breath of God to blow back dust clouds, and the Banishment of Locusts to swat at the falling meteorites themselves. As when she destroyed the first tidal wave, Petra had no doubt the world saw her in action, a Khan-like giant towering over cities and oceans, with a halo upon her brow, bracelets upon her wrists, and the X logo of Thermivex covering her body. Such had apparently been the source of the ancient Bible painting after Noah last operated the machinery. So, did that make Khan a lie? The Order of Khan, despite its faults and historical abuses, was still at its heart a preaching of goodness and charity. So did it really matter whether a deity called Great Khan the Protector existed in fact? Petra pondered this as she took off the golden suit, gloves, and halo. She had been standing for so long that her back and feet felt on fire. Her mind was bursting with everything she'd learned and done. Thirst and hunger moved inside her like starving rats. Sleep beckoned her to lay down on the stone floor, but she thought it would be wiser to do so out in the pit. She didn't want to be hidden in here, unconscious, when Hollio eventually came back for her. That is, if he had not already. Petra crawled back through the hole, stepping on top of the fake door stone, and climbed down into the pit, which was still littered with fallen plank stones and the altar of summoning. It was night again, and her dying glow wand revealed no one at the top of the pit. Maybe she would perish before they rescued her. Well, that was all right. She'd performed her function. The sky that she saw was now free of meteorite streaks. She glanced back at the hole into the secret chamber and glanced again. It was gone. Nothing but a smooth sheen of stone. Summoning her remaining strength, Petra climbed back up and reached out, and her hand passed through the rock. She felt the air of the hidden room on the other side. Holding her breath as if she were dunking her head into water, Petra poked her head in. The wall covering the hole vanished as she entered. She shone in the glow wand and saw that the golden suit and instruments were hanging where she'd left them. The air smelled dry and cool in here, somehow still insulated from the outside world despite the hole. She withdrew into the pit, and the illusory wall reappeared. Another ruse. She supposed the illusion had appeared when she reactivated Khan's machinery. Petra was glad. Noah had wanted to keep Khan out of evil hands, and she could see why. The ancient American technology could easily devastate the world, and ignorance of Khanite rituals wouldn't thwart evil people for long. Or, in the hands of a determined Khanite pope, the control grid could be used to overthrow a corrupt world government. Sighing with exhaustion, Petra climbed down off the doorstone. She could see it all now, how Hollio and the others would find her here and excitedly report that Khan had saved the world. With a small stretch of imagination, they would look at this huge pit that had opened beneath Noah's temple and decide that Great Khan, the sleeping god, had risen from it. Petra went to the stone altar table resting in the center of the pit and traced her fingers along the crisscross seal. If she wished, she could confirm her disciples' version of events, lying to them, and revive the Order of Khan, consolidate her own power, and then use the ancient machines to gain yet more power. Or she could reveal the secret room, tell the truth, and hope they still loved her, then trade the technology to the All Council for an unprecedented reprieve from her death sentence. Or should she seek a course of action somewhere between the two options? Good and evil. But which was which? There was nothing to guide her now except the internal moral compass she had inherited from Slova. Petra's fingers came to rest in the center of the crisscross. She lay down on the altar to wait.
Thank you for listening to Noah's Temple, written and narrated by Matthew Warner. You can find out more about Matthew at matthewwarner.com. Much of our music in this episode was provided by Digital Juice at digitaljuice.com. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at variantfrequencies.com. If you like what you've heard here on Variant Frequencies, please tell your friends. Thank you from all of us at Variant Frequencies.